We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always, over there in beautiful Chicagoland, the one, the only, still the incomparable Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Good. Just ate some lunch. It was actually pretty good. I called it my sad lunch or sad dinner a couple weeks ago on Twitter, but it's pretty good. It's like a spicy black bean burger, like a veggie burger, with a crispy hash brown on a toasted English muffin with like burger sauce and barbecue sauce. It's pretty good in a pinch.
Delightful.
So delightful. I got that. And now I have my throat coat tea to keep the instrument lubricated. And I'm excited for this episode, both because I obviously have a soft spot for the Pac-12 and the Pac-12 South, because that's where I'm from, Pac-12 South country. But also, I like sitting back and letting Ty cook. Ty bringing the takes about a region of the country that he hasn't spent a lot of time in, but does watch. And just like sitting back, maybe poking the takes a little bit, but I'm just going to let Ty cook. And then we're going to talk about the Mountain West, which is where I contribute.
Pac-12 South, this is our final conference preview. We've done them all.
Yes.
You can go back. You can listen. If you join up on the newsletter at newsletter.solidverbal.com, if you haven't already done so, we will send out all of those links a little bit later on in the day. But this is, it's the capstone, really, to some extent, at least on conference previews. We still do have a national preview show. We still do have a fantasy thing show that we're going to put together and Q&A. And we have other content that we're planning before we get to week zero. But week zero is going to be here before you know it. And that's frankly very exciting. So much of what we've talked about here over the last 2 weeks.
Words have meaning. I've said this before. You cannot call week zero so exciting.
No, it is so exciting. No, it is so exciting. Here's why.
Okay.
How many of these previews have we just interjected with, well, 2020 was the COVID year. 2020 was a weird year.
Right.
Stanford dealt with a lot in 2020.
Are you mocking Stanford's
adversity? I'm not mocking anybody.
Okay.
We all had to go through 2020 and it sucked. And so I am excited to get some bit of a normal season off the ground. Knock on wood. That's why I'm excited.
Okay. I'm with you. I'm absolutely with
you.
And then we're finishing with the headliner, the Pac-12 South.
Finishing with the headliner, again, don't forget to go on out to verballers.com. That's Patreon where we're cranking up some of the bonus stuff. Also, go on out to solidverbal.com and check out all the cool articles that we're working on there. I'm going to revamp the homepage to give them a little bit more prominence at some point here, but we've been very busy researching the hell out of all of these preview shows. And so hopefully next week I can work on that.
I'm excited to hear where we're going from here.
Where shall we start our Pac-12 South coverage, Dan? Where would you like me to go first?
Let's start with a team who I believe plays week zero, right? The UCLA Bruins. About it? No longer taking a back seat to the Trojans across town, downtown LA. We're going to Westwood / Pasadena.
Yeah.
We're talking baby blue and gold, talking baby Bears. We're talking Chip Kelly's Bruins.
Literally.
Where do we want to begin?
Literally.
So hold on. Let's explain the format if people haven't listened. If this is like a specific Pac-12 South fan who has not listened to other previews, What is our format for these previews?
Format is we're taking more of a car / road themed approach here to all of our previews. If you go back and listen to the ACC show, we were a lot more heavy handed with the audio drops. I feel like we both got tired of those over the course of time. The only one we've retained is the Dumb and Dumber one.
I can get 70 miles to the gallon on this hog.
Ah, it's great.
It's the only one. And we don't play it as frequently as we did in the very beginning. But four elements to all the previews. The first is a look back at 2020. The second is an honest assessment of the curb appeal of a particular program. The third is the road ahead. What's it look like? What's your schedule? And the fourth, when we play the Dumb and Dumber sound, what you got in the tank? Talk about the Vegas over-under. What do we think is a realistic expectation for a given program?
I have, since you played the Dumb and Dumber drop, thought about a line that is so funny to me in Dumb and Dumber and trying to figure out a way to award a team this line. And we don't have the audio drop at the ready, but apparently it was improvised when Lloyd Christmas, Jim Carrey, walks out of the convenience store wearing like the giant cowboy hat. And there's like a bunch of dudes in the parking lot. And he goes, "Big gulps, huh? Well, see you later. So my proposal is we just figure out who has the toughest schedule in the Pac-12 South, because it's a bunch of big gulps of tough teams to swallow. See you later. Oh, well.
Well, oh, God, I have some candidates that we can talk through.
Okay, great.
I have some candidates that we can talk through, but you wanted to start with UCLA. You are right. They do have a week zero game against Hawaii. And I will start with the road because I haven't started there. None of us have really on any of these previews, but it is interesting because UCLA is in a position where they have a week zero and a week one game. And I think that is significant because their week one opponent is LSU. Now, LSU had a rocky year last year, eventually pulled it together a lot more down the stretch, but it is helpful. And we've talked about it time and again on the show, that improvement between game one and game two for many teams can often be very drastic. UCLA will have the benefit of that. Mm-hmm. Having played Hawaii in week zero and then LSU in week one, it's part of the reason why I know you're a little bit higher on UCLA in that matchup than might otherwise meet the eye.
Yep. Now, also, by the way, there's risk, right? Somebody can get hurt in week zero, and you're not as fresh as humanly possible for a big matchup against LSU, but I think that's a worthy risk.
So much of UCLA's season will be defined by this road. Per Phil Steele, they've got the 13th most difficult schedule in college football.
Wow.
And I think that is an accurate number for where the schedule is at. LSU in week one. October is just brutal. It is just brutal. Arizona State at home, on the road at Zona, on the road at Washington, back home against Oregon, on the road at Utah. That's October. There's not much wiggle room there to get the six wins, even if there's a lot of improvement. And that's why I say the schedule will really color how we feel about Chip Kelly and UCLA as we look into 2021. That is a very difficult schedule. And I think we saw improvement. We saw improvement last year. I think we're going to continue to see improvement, and I'll talk through why. But so much of that improvement, so much of how we feel about UCLA on the backside of this season is going to be colored by that just impossible schedule. It's really tough to get them to 7, which is the Vegas over-under. I can get them to 6, but 7.
Really?
7's pushing it. Yeah, absolutely.
UCLA had I'm sure you'll go into this with your 2020, they had a Rob Nen problem, right? It's the closer situation where Nope. They have a shootout with Stanford and come up just short. Chase Griffin, the backup quarterback, starts against Oregon and is driving to win that game, and they come up just short. They have, I believe, they give up. There's like a crazy turnover issue early against Colorado, and they fight all the way back against a Colorado team that was fine, but nothing crazy, and came up just short. And so that next step for them this year, and I'm sure you're going to get into why that happened last year and what they can do to fix that this year, is getting over that Rob Nen hump.
I love that you make these random baseball references, and you know that I will get all of them.
Oh my God, of course. I could go deeper. I could go, who's the closer with six fingers?
Antonio Alfonseca.
Okay, so they have an Alfonseca problem.
Yeah. Well,
that's Rob Nen's easier to say.
3-4 last year. You are correct. They lost to Colorado, Oregon, USC, and Stanford. All of them are one-score games. Mm-hmm. So the appeal now as we move forward into 2021 is that a lot of guys are back. 20 starters are back from that season. We've seen incremental improvement over the last couple years under Chip Kelly. It was uncertain at times, but it's notable at this point now. I think it's tangible that we've seen improvement. And the Pac-12 South really does feel like it's pretty wide open. So a lot of optimism around this program. You've been peddling it for a while.
Yeah.
Dorian Thompson Robinson, DTR, as he's known, mm-hmm. is definitely getting better each season. They've got a solid 1-2 punch now in the backfield with Britton Brown, and Zach Charbonnet, who mm-hmm. transfers over from Michigan. I do have questions about what they look like out wide.
And same.
Greg Dulcich, their former walk-on tight end, might be their best weapon. And that's fine for how Chip Kelly likes to scheme. Dulcich got down the field. He was more of a vertical threat than a lot of tight ends tend to be. But outside him and another big tight end in Mike Martinez, the wide receiving core is something of a question mark for me. There are guys out there with promise, but not a lot of production so far. If they want to take that next step, I feel like that's one area where they need to get it, where they could get it. It doesn't mean it's the only area where they could improve. The running game, I think, is still very formidable. But if they want to be more complete on offense, they need to figure out a solution out wide.
We agree.
Defensively, it's tough to say, man. The defense last year was not great. Really not great against the run. Gave up a ton of big plays. They were bad at getting off the field on third downs. A lot like Texas, they couldn't tackle, which is a problem for a defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is where you come to the point where you have to ask the question, okay, we bring back a ton on defense. Is that a good thing?
Right. Well, no, I think they stopped a bunch of big plays. They were inefficient, but they actually kept the field relatively short.
All right. Well, I'll look at that, but regardless.
Look deeper. That's what I have in my notes. Continue.
Regardless. We'll look into that, but the tackling thing definitely holds true.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that begs the point, like, are we happy that they're bringing back all these guys? Is that a good thing? Conventional wisdom is yes, that's great. They're going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The schedule's very tough. I don't know what the realistic expectation is for the defense. That said, the depth is much better now than at any point in the last 3 years. So that is a plus.
Yeah.
That is very much a plus for UCLA. I like this team a lot. I think the fact they were in so many one-score games, much like I think it was Iowa State when we talked about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just, having that experience definitely builds character. And looking ahead now into 21 with this really tough schedule, they're going to scare the pants off some teams. I don't know if they're going to get the 7 wins. I don't know if they're going to get the 8 wins, but UCLA is a good team. They should not be taken lightly. And Chip Kelly, very incrementally over the course of the last couple seasons now, has definitely made them a better squad.
Yeah, though it is strange that when you characterize his Oregon teams, it was defined by those fast game changers, guys who were open field electric players. And that's what he has been unable to build upon with his, you know, obviously the stop in the NFL or the couple stops in the NFL. That's where UCLA has really struggled to sell the program or develop within the program those guys who can take the ball and go. So yeah, that, yeah. I think, yeah, that's a missing piece. And I think you're right. The depth has been built up. I think to make that leap from what you have them as like a 6-7 win program-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's not just that, but it is having like, okay, where is there an Evan Weaver? where is there a Cameron Bynum, you know, to use Cal for an example? Like, where is that, like, clear NFL or all Pac-12 caliber player on multiple levels of the offense and defense? Like,
yeah,
I think
I don't know.
They're better everywhere. And you mentioned Greg Dulcich. I think that's a really nice place to start. But it's who is bursting through that all-conference ceiling. And that's where it's a little trickier to find. They have guys.
They do.
But do they have dudes? Yeah, I don't know what that means. No. But that's my eval. Yeah.
Do they have dudes? And that's a great point. I like this team. By the way, you're right about, in general, the big play thing. They were pretty good at stopping them, just not on third downs, which is what I was referring to.
Gotcha.
Third downs
and not a good tackling team. Yeah.
But that points out the tackling inefficiency. Mm-hmm. I think six wins. I like the team. I like the players. They are getting better. I think it's going to be masked by a really tough schedule.
I'm seeing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.5 winnable games.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they'll win them, but I think they can, if DTR is clean with the ball, and like they won a game against ASU when the opposing quarterback wasn't necessarily clean, when they had those turnover issues near the goal line. I think if DTR takes a step and the defense shores things up with the long offseason, I think they can win 8 games. I really do.
I hope so.
I think they are across the board solid in a way that not a lot of teams are.
By the way, they could beat LSU week 1, their second game. And that could totally change the perception of this team. They could beat LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's go to ASU. You mentioned the Sun Devils.
Mm-hmm. I did.
2-2 a year ago, they lost 2 one-score games. And what's becoming a theme here to...
Took like a month off between games.
Yeah, yeah.
Against their own wishes, obviously. But yeah.
USC and UCLA before destroying Arizona by 63. Yeah, no. And then beating Oregon State to close out their year. They only played 4 games, like you said. COVID really had an impact there. Another team, 20 returning starters, 9 on offense, 11 on defense. Herm Edwards is quoted as saying he feels they're ready to contend for the conference.
I mean, they were like 90 seconds away from being 4-0. Like, this was not a team that had dramatic issues. They just had bad breaks.
ASU, much like in 2015, is my crush team, Dan.
Uh-oh.
They are my crush team.
Now you're getting sucked in. Okay.
I'm coming back, baby. I'm coming back for more. There aren't a whole lot of questions about these guys. There aren't.
Okay.
I really like Jaden Daniels. I know last year was sort of up and down. I take it with a grain of salt. I take it all with a grain of salt last year. I think he's the real deal. And personally, I am really excited because he's got weapons around him, especially a running back. Rashad White.
The running backs are good.
average 10 yards a carry. They've got some other weapons that I think give them different skill sets at the running back position. Daniel Ngata saw some action last year as well. Maybe he'll see more. So they've got that he can fall back on. He's also got an experienced line in front of him that was really good at run blocking, which is why I think you're going to see the running game is a focal point of this offense. They can lean on the ground game while they try to figure out who their number one target is out wide. That's the main question on offense. Who's your number one dude? I don't know. Outside of whether Jaden Daniels can become more consistent at quarterback, my only question is that. Who is the dude out wide? And they got options.
Yeah.
And multiple guys who are 6'7", which is potentially another fantasy thing, which we could talk about.
A guy named LV.
Yeah, LV. So they got options, and I think it's going to work itself out. But I just don't know who that number one threat is right now.
Johnny Wilson went to my high school, if that counts.
Sure.
He's one of the 6'7 dudes, and he was committed to Oregon and then flipped late to ASU. Had some drop issues early on, but I mean, if he gets his act together, that's pretty attractive.
They should put those guys in on field goal coverage, trying to block a field goal.
Yeah, like putting a wide body dude in the goal.
Yeah.
In hockey. That's your big strat.
Okay. It is.
Okay.
Patreon exclusive.
So your questions are about who emerges out wide to keep defenses honest and what else? Because I'm pretty sure it was not a perfect defense.
It wasn't a perfect defense. Antonio Pierce is now solely in charge of that defense. Mm-hmm. It returns all 11 guys. He says that he's comfortable playing everybody on the two deep roster, which I think more than anything speaks to the depth that Herm has built now in 3 years at Tempe. Or his previous 3 years at Tempe. Last year, the rush defense was pretty bad. And so that's the area where they really need to shore it up. They're deep along the line, and they added some transfers to help boost their depth and give them more options. But it's unclear what that unit's going to look like and how big of a jump we might see. Outside of that, the back seven's awesome. Back seven's really good. It's a top 25 linebacking core, probably a top 10 top 15 secondary nationally. They're very good.
They're like 25. Yeah, Chase Lucas has been in Tempe for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So they've got experience. They've got veteran leadership that I think is going to propel that defense. And that's the thing that I like about them. It's the thing I like about them. Like, even if the offense for some reason deals with injuries or guys don't produce, there are some staples there that you can really count on. Having a good back seven ain't going to hurt you in the Pac-12. That's something you can lean on with the kind of depth that they have on defense. That will raise the floor for you. And then on offense, the sky's the limit, depending on what you do with the passing game and what you can get on the ground. But I think all the ingredients are there. The road ahead has some landmines. There are some road games that I worry about. I'm not as worried about BYU. Just relatively early. BYU loses a lot. But
right.
At UCLA, at Utah, at Washington, at Oregon State, actually the week after Washington and before the Commonwealth Cup. So maybe a little bit of a letdown look ahead thing. Also USC and Washington, the road game at Washington on back-to-back weeks.
Sure.
So it's not easy.
And potentially a letdown spot at Reser, right? Against Oregon State after the Washington game. Two straight road games. And that's
what I'm saying.
Reser is a for sure letdown spot. And didn't they lose there 2 years ago?
Herm attempted
like some crazy throwback 2-point conversion situation. So tough. That'll be a tough spot late in the season. Worn down, not as deep. Yeah, I'm with you.
This is my crush team. The over-under is 9. I'm going over. I could see double-digit wins here. I could see a run at the Pac-12. I mean, they're very good. It's a very good team. I'm trying not to get too sucked in the way I was a couple years ago. But whereas that was a trendy pick, this just feels like a solid pick to win 9 games. It's a solid team. They're built right.
It does.
And they will go to whatever heights Jaden Daniels can take them.
So I'm looking at week 9 of the 2019 college football rankings, okay? Or let's say week 10 or something. Yeah, somewhere in there, week 10. So if ASU is 8-0 around Halloween. That's when they will have played 8 games, correct? Or yeah, 8 games. Eight 3 games. 6 8, eight games. Games. They will be in the top 7-ish of college football. If not, you know, top 3, 4, 5, whatever, depending on how those 8 games go. There's a very real shot that they're at Halloween 8-0, right?
Yeah.
I mean, of those teams in their way of starting out the season, this is before USC and Washington in consecutive weeks.
Correct.
So Wazoo the week after their bye week. So it's at UCLA, at Utah, are the two toughest road tilts within the conference. So if you were to give me a number out of 100 simulations of the season, and how many of those are they 8-0 at Halloween? Because if ASU is as you are advertising them to be,
70,
depending on how you feel about Utah, because you've looked at UCLA as like a 500-ish win team.
Yeah.
So you don't see roadblocks really before Halloween, depending on what you think of Utah in Salt Lake a week after playing Stanford.
No, I see roadblocks. I see roadblocks.
Okay.
And I think the schedule is spaced out well. There aren't
gauntlets. Oh, you just called them your crush team.
They're on my
crush team. You have inordinate amounts of lust towards ASU.
I do, because UCLA has a solid team, but very real questions about, you know, what happens next.
Sure.
And Utah, you know, you trust Utah's defense almost sight unseen, but there are real questions about their quarterback spot and what happens with that offense.
Chaz Brewer?
Yeah. Chaz Brewer. So how many simulations? I say 70.
Okay. 7 out of 10 times, 70% of the time running the ASU 2021 season, they're 8-0 at Halloween.
Wow. Yep.
Okay.
All in, baby.
I like it. Listen.
All in.
You have planted your flag.
Steve Sarkisian.
The Sparky Sharker's out there.
Hey, Sark is going all gas, no brakes. We can too.
Yeah. Herm's track record is a lot of sort of playing close games, winning some of them, not winning some of them.
I know.
And maybe this is a breakthrough year. Giving away the USC game the way they did. Now, it was a strange year and it was the first game, whatever. But giving that away late was worrisome to me. And some of the stretches they went and the loss to UCLA, it was down to like just some fundamental mistakes by that offense that just can't happen if they're going to break through. So I get where the crush is. Especially I like those backs a lot. I like their back 7, I think, on defense a good amount.
Very good. Very good.
But yeah, last year's sample size and actual teams they played, I don't know how much it does for me. So I'm crazy curious about the Sun Devils.
It'd be a great story, one way or the other. Yeah. Very, very fascinating. Where do you want to go next?
Let's go USC, which I have concluded is another team that might challenge for the division.
It's true. The Pac-12 South is wide open.
Mm-hmm.
It's wide open. You can make a case for a bunch of teams, not the least of which is USC. Many folks like USC. I don't dislike them. They were 5-1 last year. They lost by 7 to Oregon in the Pac-12 title game. You know, good season, all things considered. The problem, as ever, was that it just wasn't good enough. It wasn't better.
Right.
And it feels like that's where we inevitably get to every year. The team is loaded. They should have done better.
Well, last not as year, loaded as they used to be. Yeah.
Last year, they had Keaton Slovis at quarterback, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyler Vaughns out wide, Elijah Vera Tucker along the line. The efficiency of the run game was not great, but then again, the running game is not the centerpiece of the offense. Almost 77% of the total offense came through the air, given that they run that Graham Harrell system, more of an air raidy thing. So they have dudes out wide. They've got a really good quarterback who's banged up.
Yeah. Brew McCoy not with the team right now, I believe, after he got into some trouble, disciplinary issues, off the field stuff.
Yeah.
Involving assault. Yeah.
So, you know, let's see what happens this year with that running game. Again, the offense is not predicated on the running game, but if they could squeeze a little bit more efficiency out of it, it would make them better. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the blind items in, I believe, the Athletics preview of USC, that Graham Harrell was stubborn, that he should have run the ball more. He should have given it to his backs a little bit more and he refuses to do so. So I don't know.
Right.
For whatever that's worth, I'm not an X's and O's guy. But it seems like there's some conjecture out there that there's something on the table that USC is not taking advantage of.
Do you get the sense that, and I don't know of how much USC you watched last year. I'm sure you watched the bigger games, maybe ASU and the Pac-12 championship game. There's an element to me where, given how strong USC has recruited and how electric their receivers can look, if you remember back to like Michael Pittman and the best of Tyler Vaughns, and you know there's Amon-Ra St. Brown, there sometimes feels like there's an element that USC is too much car for Graham Harrell. Like, he doesn't, this back tied in with our theme, but he doesn't fully know the gears. He doesn't fully know how to shift. He doesn't when to break on the curves. Like, it's just a little too much car that he's not fully comfortable.
Can't handle the V8.
This offense.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know if you ever, did you watch The Sopranos? There's a great scene.
I didn't watch Johnny The Sopranos. I did watch Starsky and Hutch with Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson.
Okay.
There's a scene in there.
Too much car.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a scene in The Sopranos, a really funny one, where Johnny Sack, one of the guys in the crew, buys a Maserati, and he's just showing it off and how impressive he is. And then he gets in and tries to drive it, and it is a nightmare. He puts his foot on the gas, and he loses full control of the car. It's a great scene. Okay, continue. Back to the Trojans.
Yeah, I don't know if I pick that up. Let me keep it within the context of what we saw last year. Okay, and we'll get to the broader point. The line does need to improve up front. And whether that is to bolster a ground game or to keep Keaton Slovis from getting hurt, because Keaton Slovis has hurt that right arm twice now.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that they need to get better at on offense is third and short, fourth and short. There were a lot of situations like that last year where they really struggled. And I don't know if that's an effort thing. I don't know if that's a strength and conditioning thing. I don't know what that is in particular. But that came back to bite them in many instances last year, and they need to improve now as we go into a full season, not just six games.
Right.
That's very obvious to me on offense. Defensively, they were learning Todd Orlando's system after he came over from Texas. And we've talked about it time and again here. He does run that hyper-aggressive system. Last year, USC had 16 takeaways, which was actually as many as they forced in all of 2019. So
great.
It works.
Step forward.
It works. Mm-hmm. Step forward. Awesome stuff. They're still really young on defense, by the way, going into this year. So they do well this year. Hopefully they can build on it moving forward. So look, like, the appeal for USC, I think, is pretty obvious. The appeal is that they should win the South. There's really no good reason why they shouldn't win the South. They have 16 guys back, including Slovis, including Drake London, their big target out wide, including Drake Jackson on defense. They add in Keontae Ingram, who comes over from Texas. They add in Corey Foreman, formerly the top player in the 21 class, who should be able to give them some pop off the edge on defense. We'll see. We haven't seen him. 24/7 Sports actually graded him higher. You know, they do the historical recruiting rankings. They graded Corey Foreman higher than both Leonard Fournette and Adrian Peterson.
Wow.
So they're into him. He's like the 12th highest recruit of all time. There is so much back for this team on both sides of the ball. And there are no obvious killers in USC's path. And I think that's why I'm excited. I think that's why I'm excited.
It doesn't take a killer, though, to take down modern USC.
No. You're right. Keaton Slovis is so important to this thing if it's going to take flight. He took a small step back last year. Not anything to be too concerned about in a COVID year.
No, he had Oregon on the schedule. It wasn't a step back. It was just a normal thing for him. Continue.
But I'm looking for a strong effort out of him this year. He's a Heisman contender for good reason. He's going to put up some numbers. He's going to go way too high in the draft because he's good. He's not great. Sorry.
That's okay.
We'll see how he holds up, because he's had both the elbow issue and the shoulder issue on that right side. And I don't trust the offensive line to keep him safe. So that to me is an X factor. I like Slovis in this offense. I think he'll be fine, but they need to keep him upright and healthy. Defensively, I feel good about Todd Orlando's system. I think it's going to help. I think Drake Jackson to beast at linebacker, and he's the best guy on the field on that side of the ball for SC. Mm-hmm. That may change if Corey Foreman comes in and makes an impact, but he's only a true freshman, so we'll have to wait and see. I feel pretty good, generally speaking, about their defense. And the other thing that I'll point out here, and I would hope that this differentiates us at least to some small extent from other USC previews out there.
Okay.
We haven't mentioned Clay Helton's name until now.
Correct.
He is perpetually on the hot seat. In part, I think it's because they never really wanted him at coach to begin with. He just happened to be the offensive guy who was nice and stable amid all sorts of uncertainty, and he got the job.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been there through the Kiffin thing and the Coach O thing and the Sark thing. So, you know, maybe nothing will ever be good enough for people at USC. But Clay Helton's on the hot seat. That does make it interesting on some level, but that should not be the main reason why. The main reason for me is that they have the talent. They have the talent. They have been building. If they can't put it together this year, then maybe we can talk about Helton. But they have what they need if they want to try and build this thing and take another giant step forward.
So I think I largely agree. I think their offensive line is not good. Like, I understand they've had a couple players drafted these past couple years, but by and large, and as a unit, and where the recruiting of the offensive line has gone,
it's not gone to a great place along the line.
It's not that good. And no. So on paper, like, the people who receive the majority of the attention, and I think we are all old enough to remember their recruiting class from 2 years ago, which was like a whole bunch of unimpressive. I mean, maybe those guys will work out, but it just in terms of the bar USC has set for talent. USC, it's easy to say they have the talent. It's easy to say they have a big talent advantage. That has shrunken. But with a solid defense and a now third-year starter at quarterback, it's fair that the expectations are where they are.
Totally.
But on another level, who is the big edge rusher for this USC team?
It could
Who's
be Corey Foreman.
The quarterback?
It could be Foreman.
Okay, so it's a true freshman who is you're counting on to just
No. I said could. I don't know.
Oh, could be. It no, could I'm saying be. Like in terms of if a team has a talent advantage, then they should have a depth and a proven element to things or a next guy up kind of thing that other teams don't have. And so I don't know, with the guys who departed after last year, like they have good like kind of tweener guys at like defensive tackle, defensive end, but like that outside linebacker, edge rush, like disruptive force. Like there's not a lot that I feel good about USC in the trenches. There's a couple guys on defense, but just otherwise, I think the reason they get beat is because their talent is probably overstated, especially on the offensive line. And that's what I think brings them back down to earth. It's why they can't consistently run. It's why against Oregon, Keaton Slovis finds himself tearing across the field, running for his life while trying to complete passes because his tackles don't hold up their end of the bargain. So that to me is the concern with the experience at, you know, ASU, with the track record of Utah. And I don't know what their current, you know, defensive line looks like, but I just benefit of the doubt, assume they've got guys waiting. That's the concern for me that brings USC back down to earth.
Well, look, another one of those blind items that I referenced earlier was the fact that speaking of their defense, right, that Drake Jackson is far and away the best player on the defense and everyone else is just sort of so-so.
Yeah, and I like Drake Jackson and he's that guy, I suppose, who can be a disruptive force, but
it's a fair point, Dan. It's a fair point. I do think the schedule's favorable. They get Utah at home. Mm-hmm. They have a bye week. Then they go to Notre Dame. Later in the year, they're at Arizona State. But otherwise, I feel pretty good. And there's the UCLA game to close out the year, of course. But, you know, I feel pretty good about this team. The Vegas over-under is 8.5. If you like the under here, here is why you're betting that. You are betting that because you are saying SC is going to go 0-3 against Utah, Notre Dame, and ASU. And then that they're also going to lose another one in there. Maybe to UCLA, I don't know who. But it's not a schedule with a ton of killers. They don't play Oregon. I would go over 8.5.
Nor Washington. Yeah, I think over is reasonable. At this point, if you were just going to invest in a team to put it all together, I'm still down on the offensive line and some of the elements up front on defense, but who on the schedule is taking advantage?
No, exactly. And that's the point.
Is Utah scoring 35, 38 points against USC? I don't, like, even like Keaton Slovis, I believe he had a good game against Notre Dame 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Right?
Good game.
So there's that element to things, and it's not like Notre Dame right now is appearing to match where they were last year, just because of, to compare Jack Cohn and where they were with Ian Book. I don't think it's an amazing year to get Notre Dame, because I think they're still going to be really, really good. They're the clear best team on their schedule, on SC's schedule. But outside of Notre Dame and, you know, some combination of UCLA and ASU, I think it's inexcusable that with this schedule and this experience, USC goes anything less than 10-2.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Again, the over-under is 8.5. I would go over flying colors.
They have BYU technically in a revenge spot because they lost that game a couple of years ago. That's in LA. UCLA is, I mean, it's always in LA, but that's, you know, at the Coliseum. And, you know, the weekender at Cal is going to be tough, and that's consecutive road games with ASU, but I think they should easily beat Cal if they are relatively on their game. I think they have a really good shot at beating ASU, because I'm not as high on ASU. I like ASU, but I don't know. I'll stand by it. Inexcusable to win fewer than 10.
Yeah. You want me to do Utah next, since you mentioned them?
I would love to do the Utes.
They lost the first two games on their schedule to USC and a road game at Washington. Saw a lot of Jake Bentley, because Cam Rising, their transfer starting quarterback, got knocked out for the year in the third series of the season.
Came over from Texas, right?
Yeah. Yep. And we also saw a breakout performance from Ty Jordan, the true freshman who tragically lost his life on Christmas Day, a horrible thing that this team had to deal with. But Utah was Utah. The appeal here, if you want to call it that, and to use your Maserati or too much car
Johnny
comparison.
Sack. Yep.
Utah is what, a Honda Accord?
No. I mean, in its dependability,
it's just a solid team.
I think they're more rugged. I think they're like the Clint Eastwood Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Jeep Grand Cherokee, fine. Fine. We can do that. But they're solid. They're consistent. They're reliable year over year. You know what you're going to get out of them. You know they're going to contend for the South.
Sorry, they're a Volvo station wagon.
A Volvo station wagon.
They're never going to break down.
Never. That's just what they are. Kyle Whittingham's done a really good job of building this roster. He's got 19 guys back. It's still a team that's fairly young. And the other thing that I give him a lot of credit for is he's been aggressive on the transfer portal. He's really gone out and tried to plug gaps as best he can. This season is going to be a lot like all the other Utah seasons, frankly. You don't have many questions about their defense. They're absolutely loaded on defense again, at least in the back seven. Devin Lloyd could have gone pro, but he opted to come back. He and Nafe Sewell are going to anchor that linebacking core, quarterback the defense. They'll have a good defense again. This is just what Utah does. But speaking of quarterbacking, we do need to talk about this.
Yeah.
The real intrigue for me, the real appeal for me, is whether or not Kyle Whittingham's going to give the keys over to Chaz Brewer.
Jeez. Yeah.
Chaz Brewer transferred over from Baylor. Cam Rising is also still in the hunt. He is a redshirt sophomore. He won the job last year. Then he got hurt. They also signed Jaquindon Jackson from Texas, who could factor in as well. Chaz Brewer is the veteran. And if
Chaz Brewer has been a veteran since he was 11.
He's been around forever.
Yeah.
And Andy Ludwig loves him. He loves Chaz Brewer. Loves him. Tripping over himself, complimenting Chaz Brewer and his veteran leadership, how well he picked up the offense in the springtime. And I didn't like this move at first. I still kind of don't, but I have very slowly but surely talked myself back into Chaz Brewer. A, because we can call him Chaz. And B, because I remember like 2 years ago, I was all in on Charlie Brewer. Mm-hmm. And back then, in the heyday of Baylor, and I guess that was Matt Rhule, their line was terrible. And right. He just got killed. He was killed. He was on his back the whole year long, and I felt bad for him. I thought he was a good quarterback. I still think he's a good quarterback. I'm going to talk myself into this for one last ride, okay? Just one last ride.
Okay.
One last ride. I've been studying Utah for 3 weeks now. I've talked myself into Chaz Brewer.
Why? Who's he throwing to?
It's like a TCU thing for me. It's an Ole Miss thing for me, an Arizona State thing for me, where...
Britton Covey's still there, though, right?
Britton Covey's still there, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That counts.
I think they have two decent quarterbacks here. I just don't know what the ceiling is. And that's where the concern is for me. To be fair, Utah has gone places even with substandard quarterback play. They're just solid, right? They're the Accord. They're right. The Jeep Grand Cherokee. You know what you're going to get. But to get some better quarterback play would really take them to a great spot.
I thought they were in a good place a couple years ago at quarterback. To me, it's who was it at quarterback a couple years ago who was really accurate and was really good all year long and just sort of ran into the buzzsaw. No, what are you talking about? Utah's quarterback from 2019. As we figure this out, as we're talking, Tyler Huntley.
Yeah, he was okay.
They had a season of Darren Carrington, the Oregon transfer, but it's that same element of. The team's next step is athletically running with the best of the conference when they're able to stretch the field and be creative. They had a different OC then, who I think is now the head coach of Sac State. And so they hired Andy Ludwig, who's pretty good. I'm never going to be a huge, huge Ludwig guy. But no, I don't think it's QB. I don't think that's the issue. I really do think it is receiver recruiting and development. They lost one of their best receivers, right? He transferred away, Brian Thompson.
Yep.
So... it's just that room specifically, I think, has been lacking these past probably 5-7 years.
Brian Johnson, by the way, quarterback from
04. Oh, from 2008?
Yeah.
Who's now is he the offensive coordinator at Florida?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
We're all getting old here, but.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, but yeah.
The other tidbit that I should point out, to the point of Kyle Whittingham being aggressive on the transfer portal,
quarterback's coach of the Eagles now. No, that's how old. Yeah. He was the OC at Florida last year.
He got TJ Pledger from Oklahoma, second leading rusher for the Sooners last year. Also brought over Chris Curry from LSU to help in the rushing attack. So it's those are the two open spots, frankly, the quarterback and running back spot. And we'll see what they can do. We'll see to what heights that combination of those two guys can take Utah. The over-under is 8.5. I can't find more than 3 losses here. I suppose if it all goes south, if they go 0-3 against, ASU and Oregon and whoever, like, that's still only 9-3. And
they have ASU and Oregon both at elevation.
Elevation.
Yeah.
So if they go 0-3 to SC and ASU and Oregon, that still is only 9-3. They could lose to UCLA. Could they drop a dumb one on the road at like Oregon State? Yeah, of course. But I feel like this is a solid team. I would be inclined to go over.
They also have UCLA a week after the Bruins have Oregon.
Yeah.
And that's in Rice-Eccles. Yeah.
Yeah. I go over with Utah. 8.5 again is your over-under.
I think I'm squarely at 8, just under. I'm squarely at 8. I'm not a Brewer guy like I think you are. Sorry.
Chaz Brewer, baby. Another year of the Chaz.
Yeah, I think they're going to win as much as they possibly can scoring 24 points.
That's been the MO.
Sometimes that'll be good enough. Sometimes it won't be.
So far, we've done SC, Utah, Arizona State, and UCLA.
Yeah, we have Arizona and Colorado left. Arizona was the clear bottom of the conference and the division last year. Let's go Colorado right now, who lost a bunch, but were a very quiet success story in 2020.
They were, all things considered, right? 4-2, really good given the fact that Mel Tucker left pretty late in the game and went to Michigan State, and then the pandemic happened, and They gave the keys to Carl Durrell.
Yeah.
Who had not been a head coach since his stint at UCLA ended back in 07. So it's been a while. Mm-hmm. We look past the fact that his hiring came out of nowhere, mainly because Colorado was in a bind and they just needed a guy. But it was not an inspiring move, at least not on the surface. And we talked about it on the show. We didn't know what to make of it. It felt very odd. But lo and behold, they started out 4-0, lost handily in the last two games to both Utah and Texas.
Texas, by the way, took BP against Colorado.
Killed them.
In that bowl game.
Killed them.
Yeah. Like, look up how many pieces reference what Bijan Robinson and Casey Thompson, the Texas running back and quarterback, like,
yeah.
Well, here's the case for Casey Thompson. Look what he did against Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was BP.
But Carl Durrell ended up winning the Pac-12 Coach of the Year.
Sure.
Had a good year. The appeal, I think, is the combination of a normal offseason plus knowing what they need to fix. Plus also having some actual dudes on this team.
Right.
Which is important. So like Jarek Broussard, their running back, Pac-12 mm-hmm. Offensive Player of the Year, led the conference in rushing. He's going to be the focal point in 21. Not necessarily a big kid, but a good fit for what they're trying to do. Obviously very productive. Had almost, I think, 6 yards a carry, just a shade under mm-hmm. that.
Yep.
And that was with a beat up offensive line.
I was going to say, they finished, I'm looking right now, Colorado finished 79th in terms of rushing success rate. And yet their starting running back was the offensive player of the year. That's difficult.
Yeah, it's hard.
To be an inefficient running team, yet your running back finishes the top offensive player in the conference.
This year, the line brings back 4 starters. The only loss is William Sherman at left tackle. They're going to replace him with an Ohio State transfer, Max Ray. I don't have questions about them running this season. What I can't gauge is the passing game. Okay. Because Sam Neuer left. He transferred out.
To be a backup at Oregon State.
To be a backup at Oregon State.
Yeah.
It's either going to be JT Schrout from Tennessee or Brendan Lewis, the freshman.
Mm-hmm.
And they're two different types of quarterbacks. It really is a question. It's a fork in the road for what kind of system Colorado wants to run. Shroud's going to hang in the pocket. He's a pocket passer. And Lewis is much more of a dual threat guy. It is not a given that they're going to improve just because these names are different. It never is, but it's worth mentioning here because we really don't know. Like, I think in either case, you'll probably get more efficiency than you got last year, but it's not a given. It's never a given. So I'm hopeful, but I'm skeptical. Out wide, it's a good group to throw to. I don't know if there are any killers out there, but they have options. You have Dimitri Stanley. He's back. Laviska Shenault's younger brother is back.
Of course.
The son of Jerry Rice is also out wide. So good pedigree out wide. And I think whoever the quarterback is, they'll have weapons to work with. But it's just, who is it and what does that system look like? That remains a question to me. You know, defensively, Nate Landman, Carson Wells are back, which is good. They've also got Terrence Lang up front, Isaiah Lewis in the back. So there's some talent there. There really is.
They lost Katie Nixon, right? He went to SC.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe so.
Out wide. Yeah.
The big change, though, on defense is that Carl Durrell fired Tyson Summers and promoted from within with Chris Wilson. So We'll see what that looks like. It's hard to say. I think moderate improvement, maybe if only due to the fact that they've got 8 guys coming back, but there is talent, which is very important here to note. There is talent.
You think they're going to improve upon going 4-2 in the Pac-12?
I think their defense will play better.
Okay.
I think their defense
will play better. That improving upon 4-2 means at least an 8-win team.
The over-under is 4.5.
Yeah. That's why I ask with eyes askance.
The over-under is 4.5. The schedule is number 9 in the country. It's hard.
Yeah.
They play A&M week 2 in Denver. They've got Minnesota on the non-conference slate. They go to ASU. They've got USC after ASU. Back-to-back weeks at the end of September. They go to Oregon And then they have a gauntlet to close out the year at UCLA, home against Washington, at Utah on a short week. So it's a hard schedule.
Yeah.
Four and a half is your over-under. I'd go under because I can't comfortably get to more than two if I'm being honest.
I can get to four, but I'm not feeling good at all about quarterbacks, so I kind of put that down to three.
Yeah, don't mistake my...
Oh, man, Colorado.
Optimism for the path forward with what the win-loss record's actually going to look like, because it's a really tough schedule, and they are still building this thing. But there are some names here that I am excited to see more of.
I don't think this is a long-term solution for Colorado, the Carl Durrell era, unfortunately.
Probably not.
I want more excitement on the recruiting trail. I want more obvious growth points, and it really feels like a they've already peaked situation.
No, well, it could be. Close it out with Arizona, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
0-5 last year. Kevin Sumlin got the axe. I think we saw it coming a mile away last year.
Sure.
They go out, they hire Jed Fish. He was quarterback coach for New England, an assistant for the Rams before that, mm-hmm. quarterback coach, an offensive coordinator, position
He's been all
coach.
Over.
Yeah, all over the place before the Rams gig. We talked about it on the show. It's unclear who all was involved in the decision-making here. Some may have wanted him while others didn't, but nonetheless, he's there. And the appeal thus far, I think, is twofold. First off, people love the guy. They love him. They can't get enough of this guy. He's going out there. He's shaking hands. He's kissing babies. He's doing whatever he can to win people over. He's re-recruiting his own roster to prevent guys from transferring out. He's mm-hmm. made good hires to fill out his staff, which actually is my second point of appeal.
Walk me through.
Offensive coordinator is Brennan Carroll. It's Pete Carroll's son. He comes over from the Seahawks. He said he wants to play with tempo. Arizona's used to playing with tempo, but that this is going to be a pro-style offense. And then defensively, he brings over Don Brown from Michigan. You remember him?
I think that's a good value hire.
Don Brown's going to switch things back up to more of a four-man front, which I think could also be beneficial for this team. So, especially on the offensive side, I find it refreshing because after 9 years now of running the Rich Rod system and the Kevin Sumlin system, I don't know if Brennan Carroll's any good, frankly, but to maybe pull it back a little bit and to settle into something that's a little bit more balanced and not all gas, no brakes, which clearly has not worked for Arizona. I don't know. I think that's refreshing. A lot of unknowns here.
Yeah, who's playing quarterback?
Well, I'll get to that.
Okay.
But I think it's refreshing to maybe just take a chill here.
Okay.
Who's playing quarterback? I don't know. Could be Will Plummer. It'll probably be Gunnar Cruz, who comes over from Wazoo. It could be Jordan McLeod, who comes over from USF.
Yeah.
But I think the general philosophy is right. And we'll see what they can do on the field. The over-under is 2.5. And I might still go under.
Find me three. Find me three.
No, I'm not.
Optimistically.
Don't make me. I can't.
All right. Here are three wins right here. You ready? Arizona football. Neutral site against BYU. BYU overlooks Arizona. They have Utah week two on the road. Or no, excuse me, at home. Holy war. Arizona is immediately overlooked and BYU loses to Arizona. And then Arizona. And then either Cal or Wazoo.
I'm going under. They play.
Oh, they're at Colorado as well, but that's a tough sandwich. That's a letdown look ahead UCLA Washington. Yeah.
The number 7 schedule in the country. So it's hard.
It's a real toughie.
At Oregon, really at is. USC, home against Utah, at Arizona State.
Okay. So who do you have winning your crush, ASU?
I go ASU. I think second is USC, followed by Utah.
I'm going to take USC over ASU.
Okay.
Where's that game? I don't know if you
have. USC ASU game is at Arizona State.
It is at ASU.
Yeah.
But it's after Arizona for SC, it looks like. So not a terrible lead in.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm going to take USC to win the division. Another USC Oregon championship game, and I'll take Oregon.
I think you can make a credible case for USC, for Arizona State, and for Utah in the South. And if you're talking more broadly, appeal for the Pac-12, appeal for the South, mm-hmm. That's it. It is kind of a wide-open conference across the board. And I like that. They came from a really odd spot last year, got playing their games late, very asymmetrical and lumpy in terms of who's playing how many games. ASU played 4. He had some others played 7. It'll be good to get that out there again. And there's a lot of talent out west. There are a number of interesting teams in the Pac-12. So
disagree on a lot of talent out west, but I'm with you. There's a lot of interesting games to watch and teams to watch, but yeah, I don't know. It gets real thin real quick after like 3 of these teams.
All right.
All right. You want to talk Mountain West West?
Talk to me about the MWW.
Oh my God. I love the Mountain West West.
Okay.
I haven't even decided who I have coming out. I'm going to have to talk it through with you. But so this is the western side of things are the teams largely, if not everybody, not at altitude, like the Mountain West Mountain. Hawaii, San Diego State, Nevada, Fresno State, UNLV, San Jose State. Your defending champion, albeit there were no divisions last year, but San Jose State. Where would you like to start?
Nevada. Today? Let's go Nevada.
Okay. Nevada. Last year, they lost a winnable game early to Hawaii. They blew the San Jose State game in which they're up 20-7. But otherwise, in a division without a lot of offensive pop, they've got it. Romeo Dubs is the name to know out wide. Carson Strong was the offensive player of the year in the Mountain West last year. He threw almost 30 touchdowns in a condensed season. That's pretty good. That's a good starting point. The defense was actually pretty decent. They were led by a good defensive line. And that hopefully, because they return everybody, that hopefully goes a long, long way because they begin this season at Cal, at Kansas State, and at Boise State with a bye in Idaho State in there. So that those are 3 of their first 4 games are those 3 teams. They have good experience back on all 3 levels of the defense. It's a lot of those times when I don't necessarily have the questions about the offense, then I'm just going to look to the defense. Like, what is the weak link for a team like the Wolfpack in Nevada? And it's not that weak a link, to be honest. The big thing with Nevada is their road splits are especially tough. As mentioned, that's where things get especially dicey. I have the Nevada schedule right now, and I'll go through it quickly. But aside from at Cal, at Kansas State, at Boise, that they're also at Fresno, at San Diego State. So they're getting some tough games. I mean, those are 5 ultimately losable games for a good Nevada team. So, but they should still be incredibly fun with that passing attack.
Romeo Dubs, 93
pretty good
targets
name, right?
Last year. Yeah, went over 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns. Love that name.
Yep. Where do you want to go next?
Next, let's go to San Diego State.
By the way, also a Norvell, I don't believe related to Mike, but in Jay Norvell and Matt Mummy, son of Hal.
Okay.
So, we wanted to go to San Diego State and Brady Hoke.
San Diego State. Yep.
So, first,
can you do the Brady Hoke voice? You need to do that first.
It's not that good. So they were just an incredible half team last year. No team. They were number 1 nationally in forcing 3 and out. You know how I feel about that.
Love that.
That's just like an emotional arrow to the heart. Is forcing 3 or going 3 and out all the time. So San Diego State was especially adept at that. Just that the 3-3-5 just did its thing. It absolutely did its thing. But on the other side of the ball, the offense needs a lot on both sides. And there were some moments midway through the year, but injury interrupted those moments. An average San Diego State offense, an average Aztec offense, as they build their new stadium and get people excited to join the Pac-12, which is just something I'm making up. It gets them in contention for the conference. When you have a defense that good that returns what they do on all 3 levels, They have Arizona and Utah in weeks 2 and 3, and that's at Arizona and Utah. They lost to Colorado last year in a last minute game, but I mean, Arizona's winnable. Utah, probably not. They have a tough stretch this year of at San Jose State, at Air Force, Fresno, at Hawaii, Nevada consecutively. But again, they play defense arguably better than any team does any one thing in the conference, which is an incredible starting point. So I have Aztec friends, and I wish the best for them. So I think San Diego State has another nice year.
What about San Jose State, Dan?
Tough schedule, Ty.
Yeah.
Tough schedule. Right? They're at USC early, and the back half is broken up, and they don't have Boise State, but they're in a fantastic spot in terms of what they, you know, the defending champs, what they bring back. Nick Starkel, who you may remember from, I think, both A&M and Arkansas, had a nice year last year. The offensive line in front of him is intact. The receiving core is a little bit new, but the defense is really what secretly, I think, drives this train. They finished 13th nationally in points per drive allowed and are especially stout up front. So you know how I feel about the Spartans and San Jose State, especially with the depths to which they fell. And they were good with Mike McIntyre, if you remember. Was it David Fail? That his name? Yeah, Fails? Yeah. Fail? Yeah. I'm a San Jose State just believer and fan in the Spartans, especially given they are nearby California's best torta at Mexico Bakery. Real name of the place.
How old is Nick Starkel?
If I put an over-under at 22.5, what would you say?
It feels a lot like a John Stocco complex where he's been there since 2008.
Nick Starkel age doesn't return much, but his first season in college football was 2017.
Wow.
Which was a minute ago.
Okay.
We're getting old. Okay. Where should we go next?
Hawaii. Let's talk Rainbow Warriors.
Hawaii. One of the more interesting teams, for sure, in the Mountain West. So they have games at UCLA, at Oregon State, and at Nevada. Nevada, of course, a conference matchup. Tough. Offense last year wasn't especially good, but they did have a DIY quarterback, which I can always appreciate when a guy kind of has to Wally Szczerbiak the thing, where he's just responsible for everything. Like Wally Szczerbiak was at Miami of Ohio, right? That's where he went?
Yep.
Okay. So Siobhan Cordero, great name, was an okay, pretty good passer, but ran the ball pretty well. Hawaii overall, which is better on the ground, which is strange, right? To think about really a Hawaii team, given where they've been this past, 15 years at the best of their ability. The strength was the passing game. So better on the ground. The good news is, they return a lot on defense, as most teams do, and they were especially good against the pass. Not that the conference is filled with incredible quarterbacks, but guys like Nick Starkel, guys like Carson Strong, they will find it somewhat difficult to play against Hawaii. It's a good secondary. It's a good Warrior secondary. So Hawaii's in a decent place, but they need more pop on offense, which, again, strange to say, but that's true. Okay. What do we got? Where are we going?
Fresno.
And also, I think Hawaii has 7 road games, which is a brutal, and the amount of flying that they're going to have to do. Fresno State, Kalen DeBoer, I thought was a savvy hire once Jeff Tedford stepped down. Last year, unexceptional. I think the highlight was the discovery and development of Jake Haener at quarterback, the Washington transfer. Fresno beat the not-so-good teams on their schedule, and they lost to the better teams on their schedule. But Haener did show promise. They got gashed way too often by bigger plays on defense. But otherwise, the defense was in pretty good shape. Just a little bit leaky. So all of the underlying numbers with a small sample size about Fresno State point to quality. They're strong at receiver. But the problem with Jake Haener is if he's going to continue to develop, he has to stay upright. Offensive line was not at all good last year. So if they can get some protection, I mean, look, it's a not so good offensive line that opens the season with arguably the best edge rusher in football and Kayvon Thibodeau in Oregon on the road in Autzen Stadium. It's not an ideal matchup. And they also travel to UCLA. It's a backloaded schedule, and the road split for sure is not good, not advantageous for Fresno. But all in all, with a developing quarterback and a promising defense, they can win a bunch of games. They have Nevada at home and they have Boise at home. They do have San Jose State and San Diego State on the road. So it feels pretty balanced.
Okay.
Where are we going from here?
UNLV. Let's close it out.
UNLV. They were not good last year.
No, they were
Marcus
really
Arroyo's first year. Tough again. All head coaches in 2020 that were in their first seasons. It was just tough sledding. The good news for UNLV is here comes Tate Martell.
like a white knight riding in.
Tate Martell does have eligibility left, and he is coming back home to Las Vegas and UNLV. No, the good news is Marcus Arroyo has hit the transfer portal especially hard, and he's also recruited. All things considered, given the depths of where UNLV was and has been, he's recruited pretty well. This year they have Arizona State on the road, a weird hosting of Iowa State, and the week after that they're at Fresno. It should be another long year, but it should also be a proof of concept type year where they don't win zero games. If they can win two or three and be competitive in the sort of lose close before you win close era of the solid verbal conversation,
yep.
I think that's an impressive step forward.
Impressive step forward. Hey, you know what's an impressive step forward? We finished all the damn previews, Dan. Give yourself a round of applause.
Oh, my God.
We did it.
Are we sure? Hold on. Let me make sure. Let's go through.
Let's just rifle off 130.
Oh, my God. We forgot
teams.
The ACC.
Yeah.
We forgot Kevin. Okay. Did we do the American? We did.
Yes, we did.
Did we do the ACC?
Yes.
Yep. The Big 12?
Yep.
Big 10?
Yes.
Conference USA?
Affirmed.
Confirmed we did. We did every FBS independent. We didn't really spend that much time on UMass, UConn, New Mexico State, and that's their fault.
Yep.
We did the MAC. We just concluded the Mountain West and just concluded the Pac-12. The SEC, yep. The Sun Belt, of course. That's it. 129, 130 teams, Ty.
Did them
not
all.
Too shabby.
Woo, okay. Well,
we barely made fun of any coach's hair. I only yawned once. I believe it was during the Colorado preview. I apologize. It has nothing to do with what Carl Durrell is building in Boulder. How many of the Mountain West towns have you been to?
None. I haven't been to any of these places.
No, you've been to Vegas.
I've been to Vegas. Yeah, that's right.
You've never been to San Diego?
I have been to San Diego, actually.
Come on. That's a third of the West. Have you been to the Fresno State Bulldog campus or area?
No.
Fresno's fine. I think people bash on Fresno a little bit too much. It's fine. Central Valley's fine. Have you been to Reno?
No.
Not fine. I'll tell you that. Reno's not great. San Jose?
No.
Never made your way up to like the Silicon Valley area?
No.
Okay. So you've been to UNLV, San Diego. And have you been to Hawaii?
I have been to Hawaii, actually. Yeah.
Honolulu, specifically?
Yep. Yeah.
Ty.
Drove by the stadium.
So we're Honolulu... Vegas, San Diego. You've been to half of the Mountain West.
I suppose I have, yeah.
Have you been to Phoenix?
I have been to Phoenix.
Tucson?
No.
Boulder?
No.
LA, you've been to, so that knocks out USC and UCLA. Salt Lake City?
No.
Okay, man, we got to get you places out west. What is going on here?
All right. Well, the West Coast Road Tour at some point coming to...
What is appealing to you? Like, if you look at
mountains.
The mountain
the
and West Coast, what?
It's got to be mountains.
So, yeah, I remember you took pictures when we were driving through Phoenix.
Yeah.
Because you were so just new to topography.
Yeah, got to be mountains.
So, do you want to do, like, a Colorado swing? Denver's great. Boulder's great.
We were going to do an L.A. swing. That didn't work out.
We're going to do L.A. swing. Well, you've been L.A.
Been L.A. I mean, Colorado would be fun. I heard really good stuff about Colorado.
It's a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. Boulder would be fun. We've talked about that for eons, too.
You like beer? There's beer.
Yeah.
There are breweries and such. All right. Have some pizza at the sink. That's the name of the place in Boulder. All right. Okay.
Cool.
I'm glad we did this, Ty.
I am, too. Thank you, one and all. Hopefully, you had a chance to listen to all of our previews. If not, you can go on out to our website, solidverbal.com, and hear more of them. catch up on all of them in time for week zero, week one. This thing is going to start cranking up before you know it. We will be back next week to give our national preview. And it's not going to be as in-depth. I think we've covered most of the in-depth stuff already. But we're going to take some zoomed out, bigger picture looks at the college football landscape as a whole. And we're going to draw some conclusions. We're going to ask some questions. Again, we have some other shows that we're excited to bring forth here into the college football verballer sphere. But in due time, we will get to that.
Ty, I have a trivia question for you.
Yeah.
Just because I mentioned Boulder and I mentioned a pizza place called The Sink. Okay. I'm looking at his awards. This Academy Award winning actor and director in 1955 was a janitor at The Sink. Would you like me to start reading you his filmography?
1955. Robert De Niro.
Oh, you were actually like not that far off.
Don't know.
Okay, so you got the first name correct.
Robert Duvall?
Nope. He produced the movie Quiz Show.
Oh.
I think he also directed it.
Oh. I don't know.
He did direct it in 1994. He then went on to direct The Horse Whisperer. He then went on to direct The Legend of Bagger Vance, about golf. He then went on to direct Lions for Lambs. Before Quiz Show, he directed A River Runs Through It.
I just keep thinking Robert Zemeckis. I can't. I'm blanking here.
He is an all-time classic 20th century handsome actor.
God, why can't I think of his name?
He played the Sundance Kid in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
I know. Robert Redford.
Look at you going out with a bang.
You should have just said The Natural. I'd have gotten it right away.
That would have been too obvious. That's why I didn't.
All right.
Good job.
My brain is fried.
Yep.
Thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for playing along at home. We will be back next week. College football is getting close. You can feel it too for that guy over there. My good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt. Catch you all pretty soon. In the meantime, stay soft.
Peace.